Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to the On Point Podcast. This is your host, Luke Elshoff, a first year hailing from Region 8 based in NCFCA. This is a weekly podcast where I'll have a guest on the show and cover something in speech or debate. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode. I'm joined here by Josiah Hemp, and this is actually our second recording. If you want to check the first one, go ahead and do so. It's already up. So today I'm going to just resummarize who Josiah is. Josiah Hemp is the founder, CEO, and head coach of Rhetoric LLC, and his past accomplishments include placing second at the NCFCA National Championship in Lincoln Douglas, numerous awards in team policy debate and moot court, and awards in eight kinds of speech competition. I'm so glad you can join me for a second time today, Josiah.
Thanks for having me again, Luke. I enjoyed the last time. Looking forward to this time.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about LD. So last time that you were here today, we looked at TP and TP prep for nationals, and today we're going to be looking at Lincoln Douglas prep, not necessarily for nationals, but we can look at nationals if you want to share some insight in that front. But let's talk about LD a little bit more. So how long did you do LD for?
I did LD for 3 years, and then my fourth year, I was just doing team policy and moot court and six speeches and Coolidge. But I did write for an LD sourcebook then, and I have since written for another LD sourcebook. So I think in total, I've probably written debate cases for at least, I want to say, eight LD resolutions, and I'm already starting work on next year's LD sourcebook now.
Awesome. So what would you say is the most significant part about Lincoln Douglas? If you had to pin it down, what would you say is something that makes or breaks a good LDer and just Lincoln Douglas in general?
It's hard to refine LD down to just one thing. I think my favorite thing about Lincoln Douglas, though, is the way that you can, in a short format, really dive deep into a specific issue. And I think that's really unique about Lincoln Douglas, as done in NCFCA and STOA, in that we have one resolution all year, which people in homeschool circles might not know. But I'm a nerd, so I like researching everything about debate, including reading the public school speech and debate website. And they actually have a different resolution every 2 months for LD. And the thing about having one resolution all year is we get to go really deep onto a fairly narrow topic and refine your case over and over and over again. And I just really love getting that deep into a topic. And I think that really makes LD unique, and people who do that well do well in LD.
Yeah, there are definitely benefits and drawbacks, but not necessarily things that are worse about having a resolution year-round. Things with resolutions that last for a shorter time span, like NSDA does, those are also helpful because you need to be able to research quickly and effectively in order to get down to the heart of the issue in the resolution at hand. Whereas with Lincoln Douglas, you have a whole year to prepare and look into every single little nuance in that resolution and things that are relevant to it. And that will ultimately let the debate lie much deeper than it would have if you only had a limited time frame to research.
That's very true. I've enjoyed doing different styles of debate, like, for example, Coolidge, you get, or civic debate in college, you get a resolution for one tournament. And that also has some advantages as well.
Yeah. So what would you say can be gained from LD that can't from TP?
I mean, if you do TP in certain ways, you can probably gain most of the things from LD, but LD gives you an opportunity to practice certain things in a better way, especially really applying reasoning skills and creativity in a different way from TP. And really a different kind of research as well. And kind of just the practice of thinking more deeply about a topic. I like to say that TP, you learn a lot about a lot of different things, and LD, you learn a lot about one specific thing. So TP is just very deep, but not quite, or sorry, very broad, but not quite as deep. And LD is very deep, but more narrow. And that's why I say, like, do LD and TP. And I mean, if you can, Parley and Moot Court and Coolidge and any other form of debate you can get your hands on, because they all teach you different things. And doing TP made me a better LDer, and doing LD made me a better TPer, and so on.
Yeah. And I think stereotypically, you can say that Lincoln Douglas is better for critical thinking skills and team policy is better for research. And I think there is some sort of level of truth to that. Both are better at those aspects. However, both styles of debate also have the other specialty included. So Lincoln Douglas also sometimes helps with research if you do it in the right way. And with team policy, you can also become better at critical thinking if you prioritize critical thinking or even use it more, which is something that you should definitely do in team policy. And something that you should definitely do in Lincoln Douglas is research. And we're going to be talking a little bit about research and prep just in a second. But on the note of research, I personally have not been a very good Lincoln Douglas researcher. You and me probably are at odds in terms of research, in terms of when we actually debate. Because for me, I'm much more logic-oriented using arguments and not so much backing it up with evidence, which I know is something that isn't the best thing to do, and it's not something that anyone would really recommend. It has its benefits and its drawbacks, but using evidence to the degree of team policy, some people may say is too much or is extreme, but what would you say is evidence necessary in Lincoln Douglas, and is research important?
So first, I'd like to actually define what evidence is, and that might seem nitpicky, but I think it's actually important. A lot of people overlook this in TP and LD. Evidence isn't just quotes. Like, if you look up, like, classical forms of proof, or look up legal forms of evidence, it includes everything from quotes and expert testimony to historical examples, statistics, precedents, logic, examples, analogies, personal testimony, and even rumors. Like, there's all sorts of things that count as evidence. Isaiah McPeak did some great blog posts on this like 12 years ago. And so I think when you expand your idea of what evidence is, you can't do debate without evidence, because evidence is just support for an argument. And if you don't have support for an argument, you don't have an argument. Like, that's just all you have is a claim. And that might work on the internet, but it's not going to work in NCFCA, hopefully. And so when you look at evidence that way, you need to have that for both LD and TP. But what does it look like in LD? And I don't think it means having a long extended quote in most situations, although I have had longer quotes in debate cases. I think really what you're looking for with LD research is understanding the ideas on a higher level. Because the thing is, the average high school debater doesn't know that much about economic policy or community interest versus property rights, or proactionary principle, precautionary principle, or rights of candidates, or rationalism versus empiricism. Like, even if you think you're an expert, you're still a high school student. Like, even if you've done research all year round, you're still a high school student. And so when you actually read the people who are experts, you come up with better arguments. And I think the cool thing about LD is you get to merge together the ideas of the great minds who've come before you with the ideas of other great minds who came before, and also your own ideas. And that's really exciting to me. It's something I really enjoy doing. And I'd love to get to talk about that a little bit more. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that evidence is more so like understanding the ideas. It's not just quotes. So what would you say is the difference between evidence and research? How would you define research?
Well, research is how you get evidence. Because, well, actually, it's kind of interesting because this coming year's LD resolution is rationalism versus empiricism, which actually is kind of a question of how people approach LD. If you think about it, you could say that the quote unquote rationalists in LD are just like thinking with their own brain, and the empiricists are going out and seeing what other people have said about it. That's a very much oversimplification. Like, don't take that and run with it, please. Like, that's very oversimplified, but just stick with me for a second because I think this kind of illustrates something. I think that the thing about it is you have to have both, because the people who just go out and mimic arguments they see an expert make are probably not going to do super well because they probably don't understand the arguments themselves. Like, if you can't explain the argument in your own way, then you probably don't understand it very well. But also, if you're just coming up with an idea on your own, if you're just going with the rationalist idea, we could call it, then you're also not going to come up with the best idea because there are smarter people out there than you. And so what I'd recommend doing is do your research while thinking. And a lot of people think, oh, research and critical thinking are like two separate things. Like we said at the beginning, like TPers are good at research, LDers are good at critical thinking. But really, good research involves a whole lot of critical thinking, and good critical thinking involves a whole lot of research. And so one of the biggest things I recommend that LD students especially do is find a good academic paper or book. Like, maybe it's a book by a philosopher, maybe it's an academic paper by a philosopher or a lawyer or whatever the case may be, on the resolution that's like very central to the resolution. For example, like a couple of years ago, Warren and Brandeis's The Right to Privacy was helpful. Last year, I found some great papers, like Proper Rights Takings in a Free Society was one of them. People who used our source book last year will recognize that. This coming year, maybe it's something by Descartes, maybe it's something by Thomas Aquinas, who knows? And you want to take that, print it out, and then read through it critically. Argue with the author. Your first opponent of the year should not be some other person who's alive. It should be a dead person. Like, and when you debate with the dead people, you develop your mind in a way that debating with other high schoolers doesn't. And so what I would do is I'd take a pen and highlighter and go through and underline the things that are important, and I'd argue with the author in the margins, and I'd be like, okay, that's a good point. And the other thing you're looking for is, what does the resolution mean in the real world? Like, don't just look at definitions on Merriam-Webster to see how to interpret the resolution. Look at what the people who are arguing about the resolution in the real world say about it, how they understand it, how they talk about it, how they assume it should be interpreted, and then make your debate case about that. And that's really that arguing with the original sources and using those deep sources to understand what the resolution means in the summertime is the best thing you can be doing at any point in your LD journey. Like, when I was at Nationals in LD, I think it was probably... I think Nationals was probably one of the easier tournaments that year, honestly, because by that point I already had the practice of debating against all these other people. And because back in the summertime, I was reading the academic experts on this and engaging with their arguments, I wasn't really surprised by that many arguments later on in the season, because I debated with the dead people who were making the same arguments, actually the dead people who were making better versions of those arguments, earlier on, like 9 months before. And so if you do that, I think that can really take you from being a good debater, or even take you from being a novice debater, to being a truly great debater.
Right. And that really states how much you can't underestimate the importance of evidence, and especially with the way that you defined it. And because people just think of evidence as these quotes that you have, but no, evidence is so much more than that. It's actually understanding the concepts at hand and thinking critically throughout them in order to know the arguments that will come against you, and also just, you know, like you said, arguing with the dead people and seeing what all of these ancient minds and great philosophers have to say about the subject, and how they disputed about it, and how they argued against each other and the rationale that they used. All of this is incredibly important to have in your mind and understand, which will greatly help you against high school debaters.
Definitely.
So tell me a little bit about your journey towards second place at Nationals. I think you touched on it a little bit briefly, but what did you do in order to prepare for Nationals, and what made you succeed?
So the funny thing is, that year I did not that much prep right before Nats. It really was the prep I was doing year-round. So summertime, I was doing what I was just talking about, like read the academic sources, engage with them, dig into that. And also, I had a club that was really focused on discussions among students where we would just like argue with each other in club about our ideas. That was helpful as well, because we were practicing by having informal arguments. And when you argue in a debate round, it doesn't really teach you as much as when you have a conversation with somebody, especially when we're talking about LD. I mean, you need to do the debate practice too. And I did a whole lot. I think I did probably 130 total debate rounds that year. You need to be doing that too. But also, like, talk with people about the resolution, because you want to be able to have that immediate back and forth where they can be like, I don't understand what you're saying. Or they can say something that helps you develop your ideas further. And that really, discussing things in community really helps you understand the resolution. So that research in the summer, the discussions, I did several practice tournaments in the fall, including Ziggy, and also doing some STOA team policy tournaments, and some in-person an in-person practice tournament and another online practice tournament. I was doing a lot of practice. And then the season hit, and I mentioned this on our last episode, but the first two tournaments I didn't break. And I was like, that's weird. No, it wasn't just that's weird. It was kind of frustrating and disappointing. And the thing about it is, I wasn't running a typical case, either AF or NEG. Like, I'm not saying it was a crazy case. I personally don't think it was crazy at all. But the thing was, remember how I just mentioned, like, you want to look at how the academics talk about the resolution?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd done that. And when you do that, you sometimes end up with a somewhat different interpretation of the resolution than other people have. And the cool thing about it is, your interpretation of the resolution is probably going to be better and deeper than somebody who just read the definitions. The sad thing about it is, you have to persuade everybody else that you're actually not crazy sometimes in order to do well. And so one thing that was really important was I actually stuck by my good arguments. And I mentioned on our last podcast how I don't want to teach people how to win. I want to teach people how to do things excellently, and then hopefully they'll win because they're doing things excellently. This is an example of that. You want to give the best argument you can, and then try to make it better and better, and not just go with the easy argument that wins. And that is key, because if you're just going with the easy argument that wins, you can have some success. But number one, you're not going to learn as much. Number two, I don't think you're going to do as well long term, because doing those arguments that people didn't believe in immediately forced me to become a better debater, because to persuade people of those arguments, I had to work harder and I had to make those arguments even better. And that made those arguments really, really good, to the point where by the end of the season, second at Nationals. But there were definitely ups and downs. So I'd try things, they wouldn't work out. I'd have to refine them, make them better. After the tournament I won that year, the qualifier that I won that year, the next tournament I went 2-4. And then regionals happened, and I got, I think it was fourth place at regionals and the second place at Nationals. And so you kind of have to push through the ups and downs. So figure out what the good arguments are, stick with them, and refine them. And that refining process is, I mentioned at the beginning, the thing that I love the most about LD is you can create a case and then make it better and debate against somebody and see what the holes are and fill in the holes and debate against somebody else and they'll find other holes and you've got to fix it and make it better and better and better. And so after like every round during the fall, I was editing my case. And then after every tournament in the spring, except for one of them, I was editing my case. And the one tournament I didn't edit my case after was the tournament that the next tournament I went to for. So keep refining your case, keep editing your case, and stick by those true good arguments, even if they're not winning at first. That's how
right.
I ended up doing well at the end of the year.
Awesome. That's a great story. So would you say that your interpretation of the resolution that you had kind of towards the beginning of the year that you had to persuade people was the correct interpretation? Do you think that that interpretation fared better at Nationals than at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, I mean, definitely in terms of rankings. I mean, there were still people who were skeptical, like all the way through the end of the year. But I figured out how to rephrase my case so that people wouldn't realize immediately that I was interpreting it differently. Normally, you're always taught you have claim and then warrant and then impact. You say what you're arguing and then you explain why it's true and then you explain why it matters, right?
Right.
Sometimes you have to actually flip it and do warrant, claim, impact and actually give the reason why your position is right before you actually give what you're saying. Because some people will just hear a particular claim and will just shut down and stop listening to you. And when that happens, you can't win the judge. And so in those situations, which I ran into that year, what you have to do is you have to figure out a way to persuade the person of your argument before you tell them what your argument is. And if you don't do this right, it's manipulation and it's wrong. But if you do it correctly, you're just trying to help that person to get around their biases to where they'll actually listen to good, true reasoning and be persuaded of the truth. And so I had to figure out some techniques with that and figure out how to present the argument better. And so I don't necessarily know that it was people being more open to it or if it was that I was presenting it better. I think it was probably a combination of both, because also by that point, there were several people who'd like heard myself and also another debater who was making a similar argument who actually was in quarters at Nationals that year. So there was a combination of both of those factors.
Nice. So do those tips that you brought up or those techniques that you had to work on, do you mind sharing them with me? And also, would you mind sharing like the preparation strategy for Lincoln Douglas that you recommend?
Sure. So you were talking about the tips for overcoming bias?
Yeah, that, and also you mentioned towards the end, like the techniques. I'm not sure if those were the same things that you were talking about, but you brought up how you had to develop techniques. I think that's what it was to overcome bias.
Right. There's a few things you can do. Really, this deserves its own full podcast episode. But top tips would be, one is lampshading, is what a lot of people call it. Basically, you acknowledge the fact that the bias exists and say, please ignore your bias. Like, you can say something along the lines of, like, I know that this isn't the typical way of understanding this, but it actually is true. Please listen to me. Or you can say, like, something along those lines. And sometimes that actually works and is helpful. Another thing you can do is what I was just mentioning of, you know, you give the reasoning before you give the actual claim that you're making. And so you kind of don't tell them what the argument is you're making until you've already made the argument. Now the thing about that is you have to do it well, because if you do it poorly, it just sounds disorganized and it's a mess. Usually what you have to do is you have to make a different point that's related that the bias is not attached to and include your warrant for the thing that they are biased about inside of that argument. I'm trying to explain this as briefly as possible, and it's kind of complicated, but that's the general essence of that trick. And then just generally make sure that you're actually making the argument as well as you can, because the judges are biased about it, but it doesn't mean that if you have a good enough argument, you can't necessarily persuade them anyway. It's just going to be a more of an uphill battle. So also generally making the argument better as a whole can help with that. There's a lot of things you can do, but those are kind of top few tips.
Awesome. So you mentioned that you did have like a prep strategy, unless that was the one in which you look at the old dead guys and you research what they were talking about, and then you think critically through their claims, and you look at your claims and you think through those critically as well. And it's sort of a back and forth trial and error process in which you eliminate some arguments that aren't that good and you keep others that are better. And you do that and you keep at it throughout the season until you wind up with arguments that are really solid and a really great understanding of the resolution. So is that kind of like, in a nutshell, your preparation strategy for Lincoln Douglas?
Yeah, there's one thing I would change up in there a little bit. And I don't know if I made this clear enough earlier. I probably didn't specify this earlier. You don't want to necessarily just try a bunch of different things as much as you want to pick one thing and then refine it. And that's why before you pick your argument, you want to do your research. So at the beginning, dig into the academic materials. Then after that, you want to pick an argument that's a good argument. And unless it's you actually find out it's a bad argument, stick with it. And losing with that argument doesn't mean it's a bad argument. It just means it needs to be refined. And so rather than just changing up arguments a lot, refine the same argument and make it better and edit it and make smaller adjustments to where you're making the same argument, but you're making it a bunch of different ways. I, with both TP and LD actually, usually have the same case all season long. But I make it, you probably wouldn't realize it's the same case if you saw the case in November and the case in at Nationals, because it's been refined that much. And so kind of make little adjustments along the way where you're developing your understanding, because you are, by the time you've been arguing a case for a whole year, you understand it really well. And you've made it that much better. Whereas if you just change your case entirely, or make a big change, then you're basically switching to a new case and you can't build off of that knowledge you already have. So keep building off of your knowledge by refining over the course of the season rather than just ditching it entirely.
Absolutely. Well, as we start closing here, I have one final question. Not sure if it's a good question, but it's one that I've kind of struggled with throughout the resolution. And that is in terms of prepping when you don't know exactly what to prep. Is there such a thing as coming to, I'm not sure, so there's writer's block, so is there like a researcher's block in terms of like when there's so much that you can look into that you don't know where to start? And if that's the case, what should you do to overcome that?
Sure, and after this, if I could share one other thing, would that be all right?
Sure.
Awesome. So with regards to researcher's block, I mean, definitely. And I think what you're describing is like, there's just so much out there. What do I start with? And I think that actually is a good question because it shows that you're not just starting aimlessly. Like, you do want to be intentional with how you start, but also don't get stuck too much. So like, find somewhere good to start, but don't obsess over it. Something you can do is check on JSTOR, which is a academic paper library, or ask a friend who knows about the topic, or ask me, what's something I can read that, just like one thing I can read that will help me understand the resolution so I can know what to look for from there. And just pick one more in-depth thing. Like, well, I mean, before that, you might want to get like a very general idea from like reading a few articles on the internet or something. But after that, like, go really deep on one source for like maybe 10, 20 hours. That's at least my personal recommendation. And just kind of think about it critically. And if you're hitting like writer's block, researcher's block in the sense that you're just like frustrated, your brain isn't working, then like take a break, go outside, do whatever you do when you take a break. If whatever you do when you take a break is YouTube, that's probably not going to help your brain recharge. But do something to help your brain recharge and come back to it. But generally speaking, like, just pick something to do and start. Don't obsess over it too much. If it turns out that a source is not useful, then pick something else. But I wouldn't worry too much that you're like going off onto the wrong thing if you're intentional about it.
Absolutely. Well, did you touch on what you wanted to cover as well?
There was one other thing, and that's kind of a plug, but I would also say that certain source books can be helpful if you use them the right way. And a lot of people just use a source book as like, okay, here's something that I can take, and I can just take their arguments directly and run with that, and that'll be like, and not really thinking critically about them. Where I think a source book can be helpful is if you do the same thing I was talking about, where you want to integrate research and critical thinking, and a source book is just another source of research. And that's really how we were trying to build our source book. Number one, we were using the principles that I've just been describing, of refining your case and diving deep into the academic material. But we also try to provide material like summaries of academic papers, and also our debate cases. We try to have really insightful arguments that can help stimulate your mind so that you can come up with great arguments. And so basically, in addition to the great dead people, also looking at what great LDers who are still alive, hopefully, write for you, and kind of developing your ideas off of that can also be something that's helpful.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your insight and your comments and your strategies, advice throughout this interview, Josiah.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you have any comments, suggestions, questions, or just want to keep up to date, you can follow my Instagram at onpointpodcast_. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you in the next one.